In the dark of night, one light still yet burns. Frightened fingers tremble as brittle pages turn. Fireside Mystery Theater presents The Midnight Reading, a summer series of dramatic recitations of dark masterpieces in miniature by the masters of the macabre. Good evening. I'm James Reeser. Maurice Lavelle, a French writer from the late 19th and early 20th century, specialized in a genre of macabre short stories known as conte cruel. He dramatized much of his work for a performance on the stage of Le Théâtre du Grand Guignol in Paris, a theater company that featured both comic burlesques and, most notably, short plays celebrated with the public for their violence, horror, and sometimes repugnant subject matter. The gratuitous acts of violence and stunning climactic twists characteristic of the Grand Guignol are, in essence, the precursors to modern horror and slasher films. Lavelle's tales often more unnervingly deal with the human condition, moral frailty, and the wrongs we humans can inflict upon each other rather than anything supernatural, which, perhaps, is even scarier. Here to read for us the English translation of one of Maurice Lavelle's more popular tales, The Last Kiss, is our own Ms. Ali Silva.
Forgive me. Forgive me.
His voice was less assured as he replied.
Get up. Dry your eyes. I, too, have a good deal to reproach myself with. No, no,
she sobbed. He shook his head.
I ought never to have left you. You loved me. Just at first, after it all happened, when I could still feel the fire of the vitriol burning my face, when I began to realize that I should never see again, that all my life I should be a thing of horror, of death. Certainly I wasn't able to think of it like that. It isn't possible to resign oneself all at once to such a fate. Living in this eternal darkness, a man's thoughts pierce far below the surface and grow quiet, like a person falling asleep. And gradually, calm comes. Today, no longer able to use my eyes, I see with my imagination. I see again our little house, our peaceful days, and your smile. I see your poor little face the night I said that last goodbye. The judge couldn't imagine any of that, could he? And it was only fair to try to explain, for they thought only of your action, the action that made me into what I am. They were going to send you to prison where you would slowly have faded. No years of such punishment for you could have given me back my eyes. When you saw me go into the witness box, you were afraid, weren't you? You believed that I would charge you. Have you condemned? No, I could never have done that. Never.
She was still crying, her face buried in her hands.
How good you are. I am just.
In a voice that came in jerks, she repeated,
I repent. I repent. I have done the most awful thing to you that a woman could do, and you begged for my acquittal. And now you can even find words of pity for me. What can I do to prove my sorrow? Oh, you are wonderful. Wonderful.
He let her go on, talking and weeping. his head thrown back, his hands on the arms of his chair. He listened, apparently, without emotion. When she was calm again, he asked, "What are you going to do now?"
"I don't know. I shall rest for a few days. I am so tired. Then I shall go back to work. I shall try to find a place in a shop or as a mannequin."
His voice was a little stifled as he asked,
"You are still as pretty as ever?"
She did not reply.
"I want to know if you are as pretty as you used to be."
She remained silent. With a slight shiver, he murmured,
"It is dark now, isn't it? Turn on the light. Though I can no longer see, I like to feel that there is light around me. Where are you? Near the mantelpiece? Stretch out your hand. You will find the switch there."
No sense even of light could penetrate his eyelids, but from the sudden sound of horror she stifled, he knew that the lamp was on. For the first time, she was able to see the result of her work. The terrifying face, streaked with white swellings, seamed with red furrows, a narrow black band around the eyes. While he had pleaded for her in court, she had crouched on her seat, weeping, not daring to look at him. Now, before this abominable thing, she grew sick with a kind of disgust. But it was without any anger that he murmured,
"I am very different from the man you knew in the old days. I horrify you now, don't I? You shrink from me?"
She tried to keep her voice steady.
Certainly not. I am here, in the same place.
Yes, now. And I want you to come still nearer. If you knew how the thought of your hands tempt me in my darkness, how I should love to feel their softness once again. But I dare not. And yet, that is what I wanted to ask you, to let me feel your hand for a minute in mine. We the blind can get such marvelous memories from just a touch."
Turning her head away, she held out her arm. Caressing her fingers, he murmured,
"Oh, how good. Don't tremble. Let me try to imagine we are lovers again, just as we used to be. But you are not wearing my ring. Why? I have not taken yours off. Do you remember? You said it is our wedding ring. Why have you taken it off?"
"I dare not wear it."
"You must put it on again. You will wear it. Promise me."
She stammered,
"I promise you."
He was silent for a little while. Then in a calmer voice,
"It must be quite dark now. How cold I am. If you only knew how cold it feels when one is blind. Your hands are warm. Mine are frozen. I have not yet developed the fuller sense of touch. It takes time, they say. At present, I am like a little child learning."
She let her fingers remain in his, sighing,
"Oh, mon Dieu, mon Dieu."
Speaking like a man in a dream, he went on,
"How glad I am that you came. I wondered whether you would, and I felt I wanted to keep you with me for a long, long time, always. But that wouldn't be possible.
Life with me would be too sad. You see, little one, when people have memories like ours, they must be careful not to spoil them. And it must be horrible to look at me now, isn't it?
She tried to protest. What might have been a smile passed over his face.
Why lie? I remember I once saw a man whose mistress had thrown vitriol over him. His face was not human. Women turned their heads away as they passed, while he, not being able to see and so not knowing, went on talking to the people who were shrinking away from him. I must be. I am like that poet wretch, am I not? Even you who knew me as I used to be, you tremble with disgust, I can feel it. For a long time, you will be haunted by the remembrance of my face. It will come in between you and everything else. How the thought hurts. But don't let us go talking on about me. You said just now that you were going to go back to work. Tell me your plans. Come nearer. I don't hear as well as I used to. Well?
Their two armchairs were almost touching. She was silent. He sighed.
I can smell your scent. Oh, I have longed for it. I bought a bottle of the perfume you always used, but on me it didn't smell the same. From you it comes mixed with the scent of your skin and hair. Come near, let me drink it in. You are going away, and you will never come back again. Let me draw in for the last time as much of you as I can. You shiver. Am I then so horrible?
She stammered. No, it is cold.
Why are you so lightly dressed? I don't believe you brought a cloak. In November, too, it must be damp and dreary in the streets. How you tremble. How warm and comfortable it was in our little home. Do you remember? You used to lay your face on my shoulder, and I used to hold you close to me. Who would want to sleep in my arms now? Come nearer. Give me your hand. There. What did you think when your lawyer told you I had asked to see you?
I thought I ought to come.
Do you still love me?
Her voice was only a breath.
Yes.
Very slowly, his voice full of supplication, he said,
I want to kiss you for the last time. I know it will be almost torture for you. Afterwards, I won't ask anything more. You can go.
May I? Will you let me?
Involuntarily, she shrank back, then, moved by shame and pity, not daring to refuse a joy to the poor wretch, she laid her head on his shoulder, held up her mouth, and shut her eyes. He pressed her gently to him, silent, prolonging the happy moment. She opened her eyes, and seeing the terrible face so near, almost touching her own, for the second time she shivered with disgust and would have drawn sharply away. But he pressed her closer to him, passionately.
You will go away so soon. Stay a little longer. You haven't seen enough of me. Look at me. And give me your mouth again. More of it than that. It is horrible, isn't it?
She moaned. You hurt me.
Oh, no, he sneered. I frighten you.
She struggled.
You hurt me. You hurt me.
In a low voice, he said,
shh, no noise. Be quiet. I've got you now, and I'll keep you. For how many days have I waited for this moment?
Keep still, I say, keep still. No nonsense. You know I am much stronger than you. He seized both her hands in one of his, took a little bottle from the pocket of his coat, drew out the stopper with his teeth, and went on in the same quiet voice.
Yes, it is vitriol. Bend your head. There, you will see. We are going to be incomparable lovers, made for each other. You tremble. Do you understand now why I had you acquitted and why I made you come here today? Your pretty face will be exactly like mine. You will be a monstrous thing and, like me, blind. Oh, yes, it hurts. Hurts terribly.
She opened her mouth to implore. He ordered.
No, not that. Shut your mouth. I don't want to kill you. That would make it too easy for you.
Gripping her in the bend of his arm, he pressed his hand on her mouth and poured the acid slowly over her forehead, her eyes, her cheeks. She struggled desperately, but he held her too firmly and kept pouring as he talked.
There, a little more. You bite. But that's nothing. It hurts. Doesn't it? It is hell!
Suddenly he flung her away, crying,
I am burning myself!
She fell, writhing on the floor. Already her face was nothing but a red rag. Then he straightened himself, stumbled over her, felt about the wall to find the switch, and put out the light. And round them, as in them, was a great darkness.
That was The Last Kiss, read by Ali Silva. Maurice Lavelle was a doctor as well as an author, and began to write while on long night shifts in a hospital where he was working as a surgeon. Many of his Conte Cruel, or Cruel Tales, were translated into English by Alice Eyre Macklin and published shortly after the First World War. In her translator's notes, Macklin considers Lavelle to have a complete understanding of the sick as well as of the mentally deficient brain, and laments the loss to the medical profession when Lavelle chose instead to become a writer of stories that show so clearly how very fine the line is between sanity and brain sickness. Here to read for us again is Ali Silva with Maurice Lavelle's A Madman.
He was neither wicked nor cruel, but he hungered for the unexpected. The theater did not interest him, yet he attended often, hoping for the outbreak of a fire. He went to the fair at Neuilly to see if perhaps one of the menagerie animals might go wild and mangle its trainer. Once he even visited the bullring, but its calculated bloodshed was mundane, too controlled. Meaningless suffering revolted him. He craved the thrill of sudden catastrophe. Then, after 10 years of waiting, fire indeed ravaged the Opera Comique one night when he was there. He escaped uninjured, but soon afterwards he saw the celebrated lion tamer Frederick torn to pieces by his cats. The madman was only a few feet away from the cage when it happened. He lost interest in wild beast shows and the theater, and fell into a deep depression. But then, one morning, he saw a garish poster, one of many that covered the walls of Paris. Against a blue background, a peculiar slanted track descended, curled itself into a circular loop, and then plummeted straight down. The top of the billboard depicted a tiny cyclist about to dare the dangerous route. The newspapers ran a story explaining that the cyclist intended to ride down just such a track. "When I reach the loop," he told reporters, "you'll actually see me round it upside down." The press was invited to inspect the track and the bicycle. "I use no mechanical trickery," the daredevil bragged. "Nothing but precise scientific calculation. That and my ability to keep up my nerve." When the madman read the article, his good spirits returned. He immediately went to buy a ticket. He did not want his attention distracted when the rider looped the loop, so he purchased an entire box of seats opposite the track and sat alone on opening night. After a suspenseful wait, the cyclist appeared high above the audience at the top of the ribbon of road. A moment of tense anticipation, then down he sped. As promised, he circled the loop with head underneath and feet in the air, and then it was all over. The performance certainly thrilled the madman, but as he exited with the crowd, he knew he might experience the same intense sensation once or twice more, and then, as always, the novelty would die. Still, bicycles break, road surfaces wear out, and no man's nerve holds out forever. Sooner or later, there must be an accident. The cyclist was scheduled to perform for 3 months in Paris and then tour the provinces. The madman decided to go to every single performance, even if he had to follow the show on its travels. He bought the same box for the entire Parisian run and sat in the same seat night after night. One evening, 2 months later, the performance had just ended and the madman was on his way out when he noticed the performer standing in one of the corridors of the auditorium. He walked up to him, but before he could utter a word, the cyclist greeted him affably. "I know you. You come to my show every night." "That's true. Your remarkable feat fascinates me. But who told you I'm always here?"
"No one," the rider smiled. "I see you myself."
"But how can you so high up? At such a moment, are you actually able to study the audience?" The cyclist laughed. "Hardly. It'd be dangerous for me to look at a crowd shifting around and prattling. But, confidentially, there's a little trick involved in what I do." "A trick?" The madman was surprised and dismayed.
No, I don't mean a hoax, but there's something I do which the public is unaware of."
The cyclist winked. "This'll be our little secret, yes? When I mount my bicycle and grasp the handlebars, I never worry about my own strength and coordination. But the total concentration the ride demands concerns me. It's almost impossible for me to empty my mind of all but one idea. My greatest danger is that my eyes may stray. But here's my trick. I find one spot in the auditorium and focus all my attention on it.
The first time I rode in this hall, I spied you in your box and chose you as my spot. The next evening, there you were again."
The madman sat in his customary seat. The usual excited buzz filled the hall. A hush fell when the rider made his entrance. A black speck far overhead. Two men held his bicycle. The cyclist gripped the handlebars, stared out over the heads of the crowd, and shouted the signal. The men gave the machine a shove. At that instant, the madman rose and walked to the opposite side of his box. The audience screamed as cycle and rider shot off the track and plunged into the midst of the crowd. The madman donned his coat, smoothed his hat against one sleeve, and departed.
A Madman by Maurice Lavelle, read by Ali Silva. For those interested in reading more about and by Maurice Lavelle, there are several collections available in print. A beautiful edition with illustrations published by Centipede Press and edited and introduced by S.T. Joshi is titled Tales of the Grand Guignol. a paperback edition, 30 Hours with a Corpse and Other Tales of the Grand Guignol, is published by Dover Horror Classics. Also, keep an eye out for theater companies around the world that stage revivals of classic Grand Guignol texts, as well as create new plays that preserve and explore the aesthetic of the thrilling horror theater. It's always a bloody good time. The Midnight Reading is produced by Gustavo Rodriguez and Ali Silva for Fireside Mystery Productions, with additional production by Greg Russ and Daniel Graves. Our audio engineer is Bill Hefner, and our show was recorded at Silo Studios in Shirley, New York. Our show was written by Sylvan Sandovar, and our theme music is by Martina Da Silva. Stay tuned for the next installment of The Midnight Reading by subscribing to the Fireside Mystery Theater podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and our favorite hosting service, Audioboom. Rate and review us, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Our handle is @FiresideMystery. And for those of you in the New York City area, mark your calendars. Fireside Mystery Theater returns to the stage for a brand new season of thrilling and chilling original radio drama, Sunday, September 25th, 7 p.m. at the Slipper Room for a show we call Laugh, Clown, Laugh. Tickets on sale soon at slipperroom.com. This is James Reeser, encouraging you to go out there and discover the best of dark literature at your local bookstore. Thank you, kind listeners, for joining us. And be sure to mind the shadows.